This is NHL Radio.
Time now for NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Home Ice.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the NHL Hour. This is Gary Bettman along with Bill Clement, and we're coming to you live from the NHL store powered by Reebok on 6th Avenue in Manhattan. The phone number is 1-877-NHL on XM. That's 1-877-645-6696. And if you're listening to us, you're either doing it on XM 204, Sirius 208, or NHL.com. We'll take calls, and we'll be joined later by a couple of guests. We'll start with Denny Brodeur, Martin Brodeur's father, and we'll discuss Marty's recent accomplishments. And later on, we'll be joined by the GM of the Columbus Blue Jackets, Scott Housen. Mr. Clement, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you? You just set a new record, you know.
Why is that?
Well, we were actually in your introduction when you walked in the door this time.
I thought I've done that before.
No, this was, you shaved a couple of seconds off.
Really?
I'm wondering just, and how close can you get? Because I, one of these days, I've been looking forward to for a year and a half now of reading the intro.
Oh, well, if you want, even if I'm here, I'll let you read the intro if it means that much to you.
It's way more fun to hear you sit down because you're in better shape than a lot of people might think you are, because even coming up the stairs, you're never out of breath when you get the cue, go. Okay. Which is good.
That is good. Speaking of good things, this was a fun week. We had all things Marty Brodeur. It was,
and you didn't even have to travel.
You know, he was so considerate because I, as I think we've discussed previously, once he had tied the record, I was going to attend Devils games for as long as it took for me to be there to be with him to commemorate this remarkable achievement. The atmosphere in the building, The Rock in New Jersey, was simply spectacular. It may have had something to do with the fact that it was St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, I forgot it was, wasn't it?
But it was really a fun night. The building was sold out. Everything from the fan enthusiasm to the game presentation was fabulous. And Marty had another stellar performance,
yeah,
as he had done 551 previous times. And he was just simply eloquent and a great ambassador for not just the game, but athletes everywhere who perform at such a high level.
Sure. Devils fans are so blessed, and Marty Brodeur has played his entire career there. And I was looking at the list behind him now, all-time Patrick Waugh, whose record he just broke, Terry Sawchuk, Eddie Belfour, Jacques Plante. They didn't get to their record numbers with the same franchise as Marty did.
Well, he has if you look in the context of what he's accomplished so far, and I don't have all the statistics in front of me, so I'll give you a general sense of them, but most number of wins, obviously, most number of wins with the same team, most number of 30-win seasons, most number of consecutive 30-win seasons, most number of 35-win seasons, most number of 40-win seasons, most number of consecutive 40-win seasons, most number of wins in a season, 48, and most minutes played in a season, all by a goaltender. I mean, when you think about the number of things he's accomplished, putting aside the gold medal in the Olympics and the World Cup, he won the Calder, he won the Vezina and the Jennings, I think, four times each, maybe. You know, as I said, I don't have it in front of me. I'm doing this off the top of my head. Simply incredible. And on that note, on the NHL Network, we'll have a two-hour original program, Martin Brodeur, A Winner Above All. Tons of original interviews, new material that really takes you inside the record and Marty's career. And if you missed the record-setting game, NHL Network will re-air it on Saturday at 2 p.m. And the show lingers and plays a number of times, and you can see it the first time tonight. So we have a special on Marty Brodeur commemorating it. But let's change gears for a second, because we've been all Marty all the time. Although, actually, did you go to Times Square and see?
No.
On the video display boards, there was a tribute to him over the last couple of days as well.
Wow. Quick question. Have you resigned yourself to the fact that when his record is broken, if it ever is, that you won't be commissioner any longer? Because it's going to take 25 years, and I'm just assuming that at some point around 25 years from now, you may be retired.
I hope I'll still be able to see.
Me too.
And putting aside being commissioner, I hope I can be cognitive at the moment that it happens.
I can see myself as sitting there saying, what? He broke the record.
What record? As they're wheeling us in for lunch. You know? If we're still around, we'll be doing okay in whatever state it is. Talking about states of it is, let's talk about a couple of other things that are going on in the league. The Canucks have won 10 straight games at home, as have the Devils. Roberto Luongo with Matt Sundin have really done great things for the Vancouver team, pulling them within a point of the Blackhawks for fourth place in the West. And it wasn't too many weeks ago where they weren't even in the playoffs.
They set a record for futility, losing 9 straight at home, and coming out of that, set another record for most consecutive home wins.
And I think that's a rarity in the same season.
Honestly,
you don't see
really?
That very often, to state the obvious with an air of discovery. Pittsburgh's also surging. They're 8-0-2 in the past 10 games. Malkin is 102 points. Crosby's next at 92. And the Penguins are 5th in the East, but are even in points with the Flyers with 84, although the Flyers have 3 games in hand. And Pittsburgh was another team not too many weeks ago that there was concern that they wouldn't make the playoffs. And since we've now been doing this for about 6 or 7 minutes and I haven't plugged anything, the Flyers and the Penguins are playing on NBC Sunday at 12:30. Actually, I plugged the Brodeur show, so this is my second plug of the intro. Boston can clinch shortly with a victory tonight, clinch a playoff spot, that is, and become our third 100-point team, joining Detroit with 103 and San Jose at 100. And Florida has a hugely important game against Toronto as it tries to pull within a point of Carolina and Montreal for the last playoff spot in the East. And St. Louis, who's 11th in the West but closing in, has a huge game in Vancouver tonight. So we got a lot going on.
Tons.
And the competitive balance is as good as ever.
I hope people are ready to stay up late for the West Coast games, because St. Louis and Vancouver, gigantic. Anaheim is at Phoenix, and the points for Anaheim, just look at the standings. Nashville at San Jose just keeps getting better.
It does.
Yeah. Want to go to the callers? Let me just whip this out here. 877-645-6696. We've still got room on the board. 877-645-6696. If you'd like to chat with the NHL Commissioner, Gary Bettman, come on. We'd love to have you.
Well, that's a good way for us to segue into taking calls. So why don't we start with Ben from Pennsylvania. You're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius and XM.
Boy, you don't know how important I feel being able to talk to the man.
Bill will talk to anybody. How are
right.
you?
Okay.
Very good, very good. I hope you gentlemen are as fine as I am. I just have 3 points that I wanted to raise, all of them in conjunction with refereeing. Last year, I was completely substantiated, I thought you were, with those suspensions that you doled out to those Flyer players for the bad hits and everything. I thought that was great, but when you went and told the Flyers that they better watch themselves, you're going to be looking at everything they do, it kind of put a target on their backs, each and every player, because the other teams went on the ice and they started really giving cheap shots to the Flyers, and it seemed like the referees were just watching for the retaliation. And I thought, you know, I really gave it to the Flyers for the season that they wound up getting last year with what happened at the beginning. Now, that being said, I'll fast forward to this year with Gagne. There was a Saturday afternoon game with Montreal. It always seems like the referees, if a team is a penalty team, they're going to watch for them doing the penalties. And like Montreal being more or less really tight to the vest, they're not going to get as many penalties called.
So, Ben, are you kind of saying that there's a bias against the Flyers?
Well, not just against the Flyers, but against any team that has a bad record. I have two other teams that I want to mention.
Let's let the commissioner address that and the notion that there could be a bias against a team or teams that play aggressive games.
And by the way, thank you for the call. I don't buy it. We made a commitment to do a better and more thorough job of protecting heads. And I think, you know, starting with the Downey suspension at the beginning of last season, which was the textbook of what we didn't want to see in terms of a player targeting a head and leaving his feet and getting a guy when he was vulnerable. And the fact that there may have been a couple of suspensions on a team, one of the benefits of supplementary discipline is we do it, we get it over with, and then we move on. And the officials, you know, are not instructed to target teams or not instructed to you know, look for retaliation for particular teams. They're instructed to call what they see when they see it, and if there's any supplemental punishment that's required, it gets left to the Hockey Operations Department led by Coley Campbell. And so I know that fans tend to be passionate in either the defense of their team or in their outrage on behalf of a player who gets victimized in a particular incident, suggesting in a particular case we haven't punished hard enough. But our officials are trained, coached, and critiqued to simply call what they see, and I think overwhelmingly they do a good job doing with that. You know, Bill, you watch as many Flyer games as anyone else. I don't think you would agree with the caller that the Flyers get targeted. If you play aggressively, you're more apt to get penalties.
That's what it's about. I mean, by virtue of the fact that you're an aggressive team, whether it's the Flyers or anybody else, connect the dots. It stands to reason that teams that play aggressively are going to be found guilty of more types of hits that are punishable with a penalty or a suspension by virtue of the fact that they play aggressively, not by virtue of the fact that the refs are watching them because they play aggressively.
Yeah, I mean, I remember in the old days of the Broad Street Bullies, you know,
we were targeted.
No. Yeah, you go. But if you remember, it was like, how can you call so many penalties on us? If you play closer to the line than anyone else, you're probably going to cross the line more than anybody else. You know, and
some of our guys were really dirty.
Really?
Yeah, some of the other guys.
You want to mention names? No, don't.
No, I don't want to get you in trouble.
I'm
only kidding. No, our guys. You're right, I'm not. But some of the guys with the worst reputations, like Dave Schultz and a guy that I was with last night, Bob Kelly, were part of that reputation of being dirty guys that got called a lot. They were not dirty. They were fighters, but they were not dirty players.
And they were skilled hockey players as well.
Not so much. not so much.
A little bit.
No, I know. I'm just hoping that Schultz here and the Hound are listening right now.
I love you
guys. Don't ever change.
As they come storming up the steps to drag you out of here.
I got to go now.
There you go. Well, let's take our next caller. Lee in Dallas. You're on XM and Sirius. You're talking to Bill and Gary. How are you?
I'm well, boys. Afternoon. And thank you very much for taking an hour each week to actually take our calls for the best sport on the planet and help promote this game. So I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. And as Bill will tell you, it's exactly an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've got a quick question for you, kind of talking about headshots. And it seems to me, and the perception from my point of view, is that there seems to be some special treatment, partial treatment for your superstar players. And example I want to use is last year, Seabot took a run at Ian LaPerriere when Colorado was in town and got suspended 3 games for his headshot. And the Penguins were in town several weeks ago here in Dallas, and Malkin took a run at Sidor. And I watch a lot of Stars games, and it seemed to be the exact same hit that Ott took on LaPerriere, and there was no call, didn't appear to be any review of the play, no disciplinary action. Was that something that the league looked at to see, figure that it was a clean hit, or did it just get overlooked, or what's the deal there?
I can assure you it wasn't overlooked. I don't remember it. I can't visualize it as I'm sitting here, but we're watching every game as it takes place, and if there's an incident that requires review, it gets noted and it gets reviewed. As I've always said, and perhaps it gets a little trite, supplemental discipline is like a snowflake. No two are the same. And two incidents that may look exactly alike probably aren't. And so I can't tell you if it was a clean check. I can't tell you, you know, exactly what happened there. But I assure you it was looked at and a decision was made without regard to who the players are, whether or not one's a star or one isn't. There's absolutely a clean slate that the hockey operations department looks at when it's looking at a particular act. If they think an act is inappropriate, then in terms of supplemental discipline, who the player is, prior conduct and the like comes into it. But they look at everything on a clean slate and decide what, if anything, needs to be punished.
So for the conspiracy theorist, why wouldn't you, commissioner of the NHL, say to your guys, say to Coley Campbell and his department, we don't want any of the star players suspended, so take it a little easier than them when you're reviewing tape.
I think that would challenge not only the integrity of the game, but Coley Campbell's integrity and my integrity. The fact is we have rules. We enforce them across the board. Sometimes people think it's a little subjective depending on who you root for. But in the final analysis, we don't care who wins. We want competition with integrity night in and night out, and we want our fans to be able to count on our rules being enforced.
So what happens if there's a little breach in integrity once in a while?
Well, that I think that jeopardizes the whole game and the confidence that our great fans have in this game.
And that is why it doesn't happen.
Exactly.
That's why I just put that out there, because I thought you would get to that conclusion that the game is in jeopardy.
As soon as
the integrity of your office is challenged, then the integrity of the entire sport suffers, and then where are you?
Boy, you're really going off on a theoretical or a theological
tangent. Because there are a lot of people that a lot of people have this conspiracy theory or this preferential theory of preferential treatment of star players.
And if you look over time, it's not true.
So I'm with you.
You know, it could. By the way, for anybody to think it would be true, we couldn't survive as a game or as a sport, because first of all, it'd be wrong. But let's go beyond that. There are no secrets in this world, and so you know, why would anybody not only risk the game, but why would any of us risk our livelihoods and the things that we do day in and day out that are so important to us? It's inconsistent with everything we're all about.
Thanks. That had to be said by you, not by me. But by you, as to why it's so improbable to think and so counterproductive and ultimately destructive.
Impossible.
Okay. Well, it's in certain parts of our corporate world, and this is the sports world, but you can't tell me that everybody shows integrity with everything that they do every day.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I mean, it's not impossible to have a breach in integrity. It's improbable.
Well, you're talking theoretically in other businesses.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to go something tangible like Ed in New Mexico?
This got really profound for a Thursday afternoon.
No, but it's,
I hope you didn't bring our listeners down with this tangent.
I hope I brought them up so that they understand what the league is all about. It's driven by integrity, and it has to be.
John Delapina, formerly of the Daily News, who's on our PR department and doing a great job with the league, is sitting here in the studio holding his head. I think you gave him a headache with this last discussion.
Am I the only guy that liked it? Come on, somebody give. I am.
Greg Balding, I'm not the only guy that liked it.
But
he's a suck up. Okay, let's go to Ed in New Mexico.
Thank you, Greg.
Ed, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM. How are you?
I'm fine, Gary. Thank you. I spoke with you last week, and this is a follow up question. Based on a Business Journal article that indicated that the legal situation between the NHL and MSG was imminent in settlement. And based on that, do you now believe that the door is open to return high-def MSG broadcasts to center ice?
That is a very good and fair question. I wish one of my lawyers was here, because I'm not exactly sure how I'm supposed to answer it. I think I will answer it by saying, I'm not in a position to yet confirm or deny whether or not there's a settlement, but if at such time we have a settlement and we announce that there's a settlement, I hope to resolve the MSG HD feed for the center ice package. How is that for a good diplomatic legal answer?
Spoken like someone with a law degree.
Well, thank you.
You don't need a lawyer. you are one.
I'm a recovering lawyer, yeah, but I'm not, you know, my lawyers... who were terrific are sometimes more familiar with the specifics of things than I am, because I don't practice law anymore. At least I don't admit to it, even though some of the people who work with me would challenge that to the contrary. Why don't we talk to Matt in Pennsylvania? Matt, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is XM Sirius.
Hi, guys. I actually had the exact same question the previous caller did about MSG.
How did you like the answer? Well, now you get a chance to critique the answer. How was it?
I guess it was fair without going into too much liability.
Actually, if and when the lawsuit settled, we hope to resolve that problem as well.
That's good.
And we haven't made any announcements on the lawsuit to this point, and so I'm not in a position to announce one, even if we had something to announce.
All righty. I appreciate you guys taking my call, though.
Thank you. I have an important question for Greg Baldinger.
Yes.
Are we identifying ourselves as Sirius XM or XM Sirius?
Sirius XM.
Sirius XM. I got to get that right. I keep bouncing all over the place. Oh, well, why don't we go to our next caller, which would be Kent in North Carolina. Kent, you're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. I miss Bill Clement and Gary Thorne. Those broadcasts were some of the best we've ever had.
Well, Bill Clement and Gary Bettman isn't so bad.
Well, that's true. They're a good high second place.
Well, thank you.
Commissioner, thank you, Ken.
I won't call games, I promise.
I got a question about scoring on a power play.
Sure.
And I'm going to assume that the league average in scoring on a power play is somewhere in the neighborhood of 20%. Is that right?
A little bit less.
Okay, 18 to 20%. What that means, then, in my mind, is that if you commit a penalty, you have about an 80% chance that it won't cost you. And you contrast that to, like, basketball, NBA, where the free throw percentage is probably somewhere in the 65 to 70% range. It means if you commit a foul in basketball, you got a 70% chance that it will cost you. My question.
Well, wait a minute.
Let me deal
with the premise first. If you get a free throw in basketball, you may get one or two shots out of over 100 points. In our case, if you look at the 2 minutes, a goal is probably scored more frequently in the 2 minutes of a power play than any two minutes of equal strength play. So the likelihood of a goal, while you may kill it 80 to 85% of the time, the fact is, for those 2 minutes, the likelihood of getting a goal is probably greater statistically than even strength play.
I would be interested in whether that's true. It probably is. We would assume it to be true. But it would just seem to me, here's where I'm heading with this. And obviously, if the premise doesn't hold, my contention won't hold. But it just seemed like if penalties were more costly, then you wouldn't have to officiate some of these chippier penalties out of the game, the cost would reduce the penalties.
Well, that's the concept behind the major penalty, where you get 5 minutes and you get to go at it for as many goals as you can score. And, you know, how egregious an act is will determine whether or not you get a major or a minor. But your point is actually right as it relates to why major penalties are the way they are. Why don't we take our next caller, which is Kent in Minnesota. You're on Sirius XM with Bill and Gary.
Good afternoon, Gary and Bill. Thank you for taking my call. I have two questions, and they probably both have been beat to death, but I don't get to catch your show every week. The first one is, I noticed on Backstrom, it looks like his goalie, his catching mitt is smaller. Was there a change in the regulations this year as far as equipment size for them?
We actually are in phase one of custom fitting goaltenders, and it wouldn't surprise me. I don't remember whether or not his glove in particular was one that needed to be made smaller, but the fact is our goaltenders are playing with slightly smaller equipment this year, and our hope is to shrink it a little bit further without risking injury next season as well. What was your second question?
I think he's gone, but it said three-point game. I think Ken wanted to talk about three-point games, and you're right. Kent has missed a few shows because that has been hashed over as well.
Well, Greg, why did you cut off the caller before?
Call.
But if you don't have headphones on, how would you know what the caller said?
I hear.
Okay. I apologize to our last caller, Greg Baldinger, G. Baldinger at NHL.com. You can protest your rude treatment. I wouldn't have cut you off.
You better get on that email quickly because it might not be active for that much longer.
No. Greg,
I was busy sucking up.
That's okay. We love Greg despite all of his foibles. The fact is we have discussed the three-point system, and we could argue that perhaps there might be a better way to do it, but what we've got's been working pretty good the last few seasons. And I think if we sensed a trend in problems or irregularities or just something that didn't make sense, we'd look to make a change. But I don't see any point in making a change for the sake of making a change right now.
It ain't broke.
So speaking of broke, I think we have to take a break.
Well, that's what that meant when Greg went like that with his hands like the break. Oh, not that it ain't broke. The system is not broken, but we're taking a break.
There you go.
We'll do that. The NH Hour will continue when we come back.
When you wake up in the morning and the light has hurt your head, the first thing you do when you get up out of bed is hit that streets a running and try to meet the masses. Get yourself some cheap sunglasses. Oh, yeah. It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time.
Hi, this is Martin Brodeur of the New Jersey Devils. You're listening to NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, everybody. Those are the zombies, Mr. Clement. That song, that made me feel very old because I remember having just gotten my driver's license. And this was what was on the radio in 1968 or 69.
Made me feel like it's the time of the season for love.
Oh, stop it. But speaking of Martin Brodeur, of all things, joining us is Martin's father, Denny Brodeur. Denny, are you with us?
Yes.
Thank you for calling in and joining us. By way of background to our listeners, in addition to being Martin Brodeur's father, Denny Brodeur was the team photographer for the Montreal Canadiens for decades. And when we brought his collection for NHL Images a few years ago, we purchased more than 100,000 images that you have taken. And Denny also was the goaltender for Team Canada in 1956 and helped the team win a bronze medal at Cortina. Denny, let's go back to the final moments Tuesday night, and even Saturday night in Montreal. I know you had your camera in your hands, but did you get any good shots? And did your training over the years as a professional photographer take over your years as a father to the winningest goaltender in NHL history?
Well, I'll tell you, in Montreal, I really got some good shots up to the last moment. Because when I heard the crowd, you know, standing up like that and cheering for Martin, especially in his hometown in Montreal. I was okay, but then when he came out for the encore with the first all-star of the game, then my picture were all blurred.
And is that because you were so emotional?
That's right. I missed those five or six pictures. It's a good friend. It's a good thing I have some good friends that backed me up in Montreal.
Well, and I think you can be excused for getting emotional and relishing the moment. How are your emotions today? Have things settled down, or are you still on an emotional high?
No, I think it's settled down now because, in New Jersey, Tuesday it was outstanding. You know, to see that big crowd in New Jersey and with all the red sweaters that were there. You know, everybody cheering for Martin all through the game. On each save that he made or touched the puck, you know, it's really something.
So what was Martin like as a young boy? Did you know he was destined for greatness?
You know, I don't think so because, you know, Martin, as a young boy, his two sons went to the Quebec tournament, and Martin never did went to the Quebec tournament. As a youngster, he was getting a lot of shots with the team he was playing, but I don't think he won any big awards like first All-Star team or something like that until he got to junior or so. And then Martin was not a big boy. Martin was, maybe 5'6", playing bantam and midget. And all of a sudden, he grew up to 6'2", and became the goalie he is.
When did you know that he was really going to be a terrific first-rate NHL goaltender?
Well, when I saw Marshall Johnson, watching him in Three Rivers in the final of a junior league, and he played such a good series, and I thought, well, if you, most of those guys are here. I know Claude Ruel was looking at him from Montreal, but I think it was a good thing that when he got drafted on the 11th round, I think, in Calgary, they changed it to the 20th round. Montreal could have picked him up, but I think they had their way then. He was playing well. Had they done so, he would have been in the American League for two, three years, and maybe not the career he has now. He was very fortunate to get drafted by the Devils.
You know, you mentioned your grandsons play goal also, so there are three generations of Brodeur goalies. How good are your grandsons?
They're pretty good, I'm telling you, and that they won't be butterfly either. They're playing the same style as Martin. They're playing the stick. They're playing everything. And I think one of them is supposed to go to Minnesota College for next year or so. There's a good hockey program there, so he's going to be in good hands.
You know, talking about goaltender styles, you covered great goalies such as Jacques Plante. How has the position changed in all the years that you've been covering the game?
Oh, my God, a lot, you know. In the years that Jacques Plante played, he was no butterfly. He was a very stand-up goalie. Does a split in the side pad, like Martin does. There was Glenn Hall, who was one of the first guys who played the butterfly, you know. After that, Tony Esposito played the butterfly. But in recent years, 95% are playing the butterfly. You know, it's not a bad way to play. But Martin, instead of letting the puck hit him, he goes after it. And you can only do that if you're in top shape. And I know Martin takes care of his health and his body, so he should be able to do that for at least the next 3 years.
What made playing goal so compelling to you, and who taught you how to play goal?
Oh, my God, me. I went in the net almost like Martin, without being almost announced. The guy was sick, and I went in the net and stayed there. But I was 16 then. When I started playing in the net, I was 16. Where Martin, I was six years old, you know. And there were six goalies in the National League then. And all those six guys are in the Hall of Fame, so don't ask me why I didn't play there.
You know, as a father, you always hate when one of your children isn't well. How difficult was it for you this year when Martin was injured, particularly since he had virtually gone through his career without ever suffering a major injury?
Oh, yeah, that was very difficult because I was always anxious to see Martin phone me after each time that he visited the doctor. And he was telling me for the first 3 weeks, the exercise were really tough on him. And Martin never talks about getting hurt. You know, he plays with small equipment, and sometimes I saw him with blues all over, you know, under his protector, never says a word. But this injury was a tough one to come through. But I knew, though, he was going to be back in good shape because the way he handles himself.
Well, he obviously has learned his craft well, Denny. We'll let you go, but I want to congratulate you and Martin and all of the Brodeurs again on the wonderful accomplishment that Martin has had, and we wish him and all of you many more years of great success. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye. That was Denny Brodeur, Martin's father, and I think we'll take some calls now. Why don't we go to Shannon in Mississippi? You're on with Bill and Gary. This is Sirius XM.
Hey, Gary, y'all make it kind of hard on me following Mr. Brodeur after after all this happened.
Well, you know, that's radio.
You're right. Hey, I'd like to say, Bill, you're a great voice for the NHL, man. Love listening to you. And, Gary, you don't get enough praise for the good things you do, man. But my question is that you were talking earlier, you and Bill, about, you know, maybe giving some slack to the Stars as far as penalties and suspensions. And in my opinion, and I may be wrong, but it's not necessarily an integrity issue, but over protecting them in a way your Stars to speed up the game, I don't see a whole lot of difference in that. To me, it puts the NHL in a different direction, and it seems like sometimes these minor hookings and things like that are over penalizing the game.
I understand the point that you're making, but when we change the officiating standard coming out of the work stoppage, the theory was we needed to get rid of the hooking, the holding, the clutching, the grabbing, the interference, because a slight hook or a slight tug using the free hand, using your stick in a horizontal position, could cost the player a stride and defeat what could turn into a scoring chance. Our emphasis is on speed and skill and flow and scoring chances, and the only way you can really do that and not let less skilled players neutralize the skilled players is by calling the game the way it's being called. Now, if you think we're favoring the skilled players by...
Indirectly, I guess it is,
well,
but
we
it's
want
about it, the game.
It's about the game, and frankly, I think a skilled player who's more skilled than a less skilled player should be able to use his skill to try to win the game. But I do understand the point. I just happen not to agree with it. Why don't we go to Scott in Ontario? You're on Sirius XM with Bill and Gary.
Hi, Gary. I'm phoning you as a follow-up call to the last show that you did before the summer break last year. I don't expect you to remember my call, but the topic was to check and see if somebody who subscribed to NHL Center Ice and also wanted to subscribe to NHL Game Center would get a discount. You said you were going to look into that, but I haven't heard you mention anything about that on the air. My question today has to deal with blackouts that are occurring up here in Ontario on the NHL Game Center.
Well, let me answer the first question. Because of the way they're distributed, Center Ice, the outer market television package, is distributed by the cable operators or the satellite providers, and Game Center is distributed on NHL.com. They have to be subscribed to for a variety of legal and contractual matters independently, so we haven't yet been able to offer a discount. Although, interestingly enough, we are on Game Center offering a package with Major League Baseball so that you can get year-round baseball out-of-market coverage and hockey out-of-market coverage, and you get a discount as between the two as it relates to the broadband distribution of our games streamed online.
Okay.
Now, blackout question.
Okay. Now, just to give you a bit of a background here, I subscribe, aside from XM, to Center Ice, NHL Network, and Game Center. Okay, so I went ahead and signed up for Game Center this year anyway.
You're my hero. I'm loving this.
All right.
What else can we sell you?
Well, probably the baseball package now. Well, but,
there you go. Call. We can take care of that.
Yeah, not until after the hockey season's over.
There you go.
I have three examples I wanted to give you. I'm a San Jose fan because, as you know, somebody from London area plays for San Jose. TSN2 is, because I'm with Rogers, they have been unable to secure the rights to broadcast TSN2. So the bulk of the country, Canada, does not get TSN2. Nor do I get RDS, the French TSN. Back on Monday, February 23rd, there was one game in the league, and that was San Jose at Dallas. It was blacked out for me. I couldn't get it on Center Ice. I went to go on my Game Center. Boom, it's blacked out because it's on TSN2. The following night, February 24th, I wanted to watch Vancouver at Montreal. It was blacked out because it's on RDS. This past Monday night, there was one early game in the NHL, which was Washington at Atlanta. It was also blacked out on Game Center because it was on TSN 2.
Got it.
Now, there's some, I don't know what kind of match is going on between Bell, who has the rights to TSN 2, and Rogers, but I can't get it.
I think I've got the point, and yeah. I'm going to answer it to the best of my ability off the top of my head, and I'm not sure I'm going to satisfy you. What typically the Center Ice package, either Center Ice on television or Game Center, which is the equivalent on the web, they typically pick up regional broadcasts so that if San Jose, Dallas is playing, they'd pick up one of the two regionals. The exception is when there's a national broadcast. And the problem you're having has to do with the fact that apparently, based on what you're telling me, Rogers isn't carrying the national networks, namely TSN2 and RDS. The best way to remedy this is to call Rogers and complain that you want this kind of service, and if your cable provider isn't giving you what you want, then you need to explore your alternatives. I'm not urging a boycott of Rogers, but it's up to Rogers to decide what it is that they're carrying, and if their consumers, their subscribers, aren't getting what they want, you need to let them know that. And the fact is, I'm going to have to go look, because TSN2 is a new service for TSN, and it isn't fully distributed. And while we may be contractually obligated to black it out, I do want to have another look at whether or not that makes sense in certain places. But Rogers is the one you need to be talking to.
Right. There's other stations like on XM204, the other broadcasters like Thistle and Boomer, they have made comments on their shows about the fact that TSN2 is not distributed fairly to Canada. The fine print of the NHL Game Center contract says TSN, but it doesn't say TSN2. I was only hoping that you could lift the blackout on TSN2 games or RDS games so that the subscribers to Game Center could see those games that we can't get on NHL Center Ice.
I have to go check to see what our contractual obligations are to TSN with respect to TSN2. It may simply be that the verbiage you're reading was intended to be the generic TSN encompassing the primary network and the secondary network, but that's something we're going to make a note of and go check to see whether or not we are in fact obligated to black out those games.
We don't have a gold card or anything for a subscriber like that. We got to have that.
I love it.
Yeah.
Although
frequent something.
A great
points.
Fan. No, a great fan. Once
it's
is
awesome.
Hockey. You know, it's what we say, particularly in this digital world. You want what you want, when you want it, how you want it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're home, you want it on television. If you're away and you got your laptop and you want to watch a game being streamed, you want it wherever you are.
And when you can't get it, what do? You call the NHL Hour. And we still have room on the board. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll chat with the GM of the Red Hot Columbus Blue Jackets, hot and headed to the playoffs. He is Scott Housen when we return to the NHL Hour right after this.
Rick Nash of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and you're listening to the NHL Hour with Commissioner Gary Bettman on NHL Radio. Now, back to Commissioner Bettman.
Welcome back, everybody, to the melodious sound of the Grateful Dead and Rick Nash, which is only appropriate because we're going to talk to Scott Housen, the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Scott, you there?
I am, Gary. How are you?
I'm doing okay. You're doing okay. You're 15-8-1 since the All-Star break, 5-0-1 since, the trading deadline. What do you attribute this streak to?
Well, the players, I think, and the coaching staff really, understood the importance of the urgency became now back then, and we realized that this was going to be really competitive. It was going to be really hard to get in. We still think it's going to be hard to get in. It's obviously still very competitive, but we didn't want to be sitting here at the end of the season regretting not playing playing well or playing with urgency in January and February. So I think the players really took it upon themselves to commit to that, and we've been fortunate enough. We've had some good results, and we put ourselves in a position where we can, if we close out the season properly, we can get in.
You joined the Blue Jackets from Edmonton in June of 2007, so you weren't in Columbus for the early days when the nationwide was alive, the city was abuzz, and then the city went through a bit of a stretch and a lull because the team hadn't made the playoffs ever. And what's the buzz like now when the team's in a playoff hunt?
Well, this is the first time we've ever played meaningful games in March, as you know. And the city is, the building's alive. There's a lot of energy in the building. The crowds are obviously larger. We've sold out quite a few games here in the out of the last seven or eight games. And the city, I can't tell you how many people come up to me and start talking about the buzz in the city and the minor hockey. Kids are playing hockey longer. They're excited about it. You know, the clinics are going full bore. So it's really an exciting time for our city, and hopefully we'll continue to give them something to be excited about.
Talk about your background. Let our listeners know a little bit more about you and the events leading up to you taking over the Blue Jackets in June of 2007.
Well, I played 5 years professional hockey in the New York Islander system, and Bill Torrey was the GM there, and Al Arbour the coach, and I managed to play, I think, 18 games in the NHL, but I was really an AHL player. And at one point when I turned 25 or 26, I decided that I was going to go back to school. I'd been doing my schooling, university schooling, in the summers and by correspondence, so I had 1 year of undergraduate left. After I completed that year, I went to law school and joined a firm in Toronto called Torrey's, and practiced there for a couple of years and decided I wanted to try and get back into hockey and at the management level this time, and sent a letter to Glenn Sather, who had an opening with the Cape Breton Oilers of the American Hockey League at that time in 1994. And Glenn hired me and went there for 2 years, moved the team to Hamilton, which was a really good experience, really tough experience. Taking a team out of a city is no fun. And moved it to Hamilton, which was closer to home for my wife and I, and spent another 4 or 5 years there. And then when Glenn Sather left the Oilers to go to the Rangers, Kevin Lowe became the GM, and I went there for 7 years as the assistant general manager. Had the great run to the Stanley Cup Finals the year after the lockout. That was really exciting for us. And then was hired by the Columbus Blue Jackets a year and a half ago.
So you're another recovering lawyer.
Yeah.
How much a part of what you do daily is influenced by your legal training?
Well, I think the legal training, the law school, the experience I had practicing as a corporate lawyer, it all teaches you to be professional. It teaches you to look at things not emotionally, objectively, and try and get to the right answer in a logical way. And those types of things are invaluable. As far as, you know, the daily skills that I used as a lawyer that I use now, it's completely different. Now I'm trying to analyze hockey players, but it does give you a great grounding in being analytical.
Well, talking to being analytical, you made an important trade around the trading deadline. You want to give our listeners a little insight as to what you were thinking when you made the trade and what your early analysis is of the results?
Well, we had talked about Antoine Vermette for a long time. We had talked to Brian Murray last year, just after the season ended, and he wasn't sure whether he was going to be able to keep Antoine on his team, and it worked out that he was able to do that and fit him in contractually. So he signed him to a 2-year contract, and we had further discussions with Brian in the fall about Antoine, and weren't able to come to a conclusion that the fit just never seemed to be right. And with the emergence of Steve Mason, who's been a great story for our hockey team and has really, you know, catapulted our team into the spot where we're at now, we had a strength in goal. And Pascal Leclerc is a very good goalie. He's the number one goalie in this league. And once we put him on the table, even though he's injured, Brian was willing to do that for the long-term good of his franchise. And once that happened, and that happened probably about 5 or 6 days before the deadline, that we both agreed that it was going to be, the basis was going to be Leclerc for Vermette, that deal came together pretty quickly. I think we were the first two teams to announce a trade on trade deadline day. So that didn't take a lot of time once we both agreed that those were the two main pieces. The early analysis, Gary, has been very strong. Antoine's played really well. We had a position of weakness on our team at center ice, and we lost Derek Brassard in December to shoulder surgery, and that weakened an already weak position. So we put Antoine in as a center, and he's really clicked with RJ Umberger. We've rotated right wingers with them, and he's just been a good fit. He plays the game the right way, and we got the overtime winner last night. And now, I having said all that, I mean, you don't judge a trade in 2 weeks. We judge a trade in years, and we expect Antoine's going to be a very good player for us, and we also expect Pascal's going to be a very good player in Ottawa.
You also mentioned Steve Mason. Talk a little bit about him and his development, and also how you managed to win games this year with five different goaltenders.
I don't know how we did that, but Steve had a really unique summer. He had knee surgery in May, and it was a 4 to 6 month rehab. He really did nothing during the off season except rehab his knee. And we really were cautious with him. We didn't let him come to development camp. We kept him off the ice. The plan was for him to play in the American Hockey League and play the year there and get used to the pro hockey. I'm a big believer that goalies usually take longer than everybody else, and you have to be patient with them. Well, Steve got to training camp, and we were doing drills with him slowly, getting him, break him in, and he had trouble with his knee again. And it turned out he had to have his knee scoped again. So he felt like he had wasted the whole summer not training, not doing anything, hoping that this thing would heal, and it didn't. Well, the good news was that this surgery was only a 4 to 6 weeks process. It cleaned out his meniscus, some of his meniscus, and he was back playing in the American League, and we sent him to the American League, thought we were going to send him there for at least 2 or 3 months, and he played 3 games, was outstanding in the American League. I saw one of the games in Grand Rapids. He won 2-1 in a shootout, and then Pascal was having some ankle problems at that point. So we brought him up, and we're going to back him up one night, and Hitch just decided that he was going to play that night. And we told him after the morning skate he was going to play, and he hasn't left the net since. So he's been a great story for us, a great story for the NHL, and really proud of what he's done for our hockey team.
We're talking to Scott Housen, general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. One more question, I'm going to let you go. Can't let you go without talking about Rick Nash. He's within 2 points of his point total last season, which I think was a career high. What does he mean to your team?
Well, he's our captain. He's the face of the franchise. He's our leader, and we were really happy that he decided last year around this time that he would take the captaincy. We were going to wait until the September, but he wanted it then to get through the last 10 or 12 games and see what it was like. And he's really growing as a leader, Gary. He's really growing as a person, and he's become a complete player. He kills all of our penalties. He's on, obviously, the power play and plays 20 to 22 minutes a night. And we don't have much success if Rick's not playing well. So he's carrying that burden well, and hopefully we can keep it going and find one of those 8 elusive playoff spots.
Well, we wish you and the Blue Jackets continued good luck for the rest of the season. I know the fans in Columbus are looking forward to the possibility of their first playoff game since the founding of the franchise. Good luck.
Thank you, Gary.
Scott Housen, the general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets. What a job he has done, because that franchise was kind of static when he got there, and he's just taken it steadily forward, including the deals that he made at the trade deadline, the one for Antoine Vermette.
Well, and I think that the fans in Columbus are really looking forward to their first taste of playoff hockey. This is the most competitive the Blue Jackets have been since the beginning of the franchise, and it was time.
As soon as they clinch, Ken Hitchcock will start talking to them about making sure that they're not satisfied with just making the playoffs.
Of course.
That might not be too long from now.
Isn't that the way of the world?
Has to be the way of the world. And the way of the world is that we got to get out of here. And if you've got the center ice package or game center, get ready tonight. 4 meaningful games in the East. Boston's in action. So is Montreal. So is Washington. So is Florida. Then you got a game in the Mountain Time Zone. It's Edmonton and Colorado. Then you got 3 from the West Coast. Hockey fans are the smartest. You got the best questions. And we enjoy chatting with you every Thursday.
How did you memorize the schedule like that?
I'm a quick study.
Yes,
what
you
can
are.
I tell you?
It's good to be with you, as always.
Thanks. You too, Gary. We'll be back next week for the NHL Hour at 4 Eastern right here on Sirius XM.
For more podcasts, check out NHL.com. This is NHL Radio.